What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hey, what's up? Welcome back to the show. This is, of course, David Scales for the Surf Splendor Network. And today I'm bringing you an episode of Shaping Surfing with surfboard shaper John Pizell. John Pizell is best known for shaping surfboards for current world champ John Florence. They've had a lifelong relationship, and John kind of details that in this conversation. But we also get to hear about John's origin story, which is a story that I actually haven't really heard told in American surf media anyways. It might have been, and I just overlooked it, but it was all news to me. And as I kind of researched him on the internet prior to this this conversation, I couldn't find a lot about John himself. So we get into a lot of that. We get into his relationship with John, of course, and then also where Pizell sees surfboard design going and surfing going as we move forward. We recorded this conversation in Oceanside, California during the Hurley Lowers Pro, one of the lay days of that event. So that gives you a time stamp and reference for this conversation. And then before I get into that, though, I will just say everything that we discussed, the videos, John's turns at Margaret River, all that sort of stuff is all available on surfsplendorpodcast.com. I'll also have links over to John Pizell's website where you can check out some of his work. And then, of course, I'll post all of it on social media at Surf Splendor. So follow along there. I always ask for your support, and really the best way for you to do that is just to share this show with friends. I'll keep producing this content, but guys like John Pizell won't be interested in coming if our influence is small. So the more people you can share this show with, help this show grow, the more likely we'll be able to continue attracting great guests like John. All right. So thank you for doing that. I mentioned that we had this conversation during the Hurley Lowers Pro. I pushed record midway into kind of a conversation that we were having about Michel Berez's round two loss at Lowers, despite him doing some of the best turns of the entire event. So that's where John and I pick up. I hope that you enjoy the show. I'll be back at the end to sign us off. Thanks. Crazy how good he's surfing. Like, yeah. A couple of those turns are just so next level.
Yeah. His one turn in that second wave, I think it was pretty nuts.
It's insane that he doesn't make it through heats with stuff like that.
I know. It frustrates me a lot. It's like he, I don't know what it is exactly, but it's like he just seems to have things go the wrong way a lot.
Totally.
Even despite ripping, you know, like, and it's funny because he's so, like, he's kind of overlooked a little bit, I think, because my theory on him is, like, he just disappears back to Tahiti as soon as his heat's over. As soon as he loses, he's like, back to paradise. Like, I'm going to surf perfect waves and hang out with my beautiful family. And,
yeah,
you know, I mean, I would too.
Totally.
So he kind of disappears under the radar that way. You know, people don't think he's a top 10 surfer.
I know. So that is,
most people probably wouldn't name him as the, like, hero.
No.
Who's in the top, you know, 12 or whatever, 10? And it wouldn't be Michel Berez, and
no,
it usually is.
But that's my criticism of the WSL at large, and either the venues they run at or the judging system, maybe.
Yeah.
Which is, it doesn't highlight guys like that. What it ends up highlighting is guys who have a fiery determination to win,
yeah,
right? So you look at Brazil, and you look at Adriano, and
sure,
those are the guys that consistently make heats and actually end up winning world titles.
Right.
But then I don't really want to watch that type of surfing, of course. When you see Michel do what he does, you go, oh, that's the type of surfing,
yeah,
that I want to,
yeah,
see.
You take one wave of Michel's and you're just like, holy crap, like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And it's powerful. It's beautiful. It's, everyone wants to be able to surf like that. But it's definitely funny. It doesn't always work in his favor.
No, he doesn't have the drive and steely determination.
Yeah, he's pretty much like, yeah, bro, just love you guys.
Yeah.
He's like the nicest guy ever.
Which is what happens when,
yeah,
you grow up in paradise,
yeah,
maybe.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or
he's not that sad when he loses his heat. And I mean, obviously he wants to do well, but I don't think he's not like, you know, he's not going home to like some bummer. He's going home to like a better place.
Yeah. I would imagine because of your relationship with John John, you probably watch all the WSL heats.
I watch a lot. I usually tend to go back and watch them. I won't sit there and like go through them depending on what I'm doing. I don't really, like if I'm shaping, I'll put them on my phone and just kind of listen. It'll be on a speaker in my room or something. And I'll listen and then like, oh, you know, I hear it's, someone's getting a wave, I'll watch that or whatever.
Yeah.
But usually I just kind of go back and pick through it and pick the heats that I'm interested in seeing and like how different guys did and watch a few waves. I like to watch, I like that, the heat analyzer.
Yeah, that's super
I usually
helpful.
Go, if I'm at an event, I'll usually like yesterday I was down there and watched John's heat. And then like last night I came home and I watched his heat again on the heat analyzer because you hear a lot of different things and you pick up on stuff. And then there's the replays. It's actually better online than it is live, kind of.
I agree.
But so you can just, they're breaking things down and you're looking at things and seeing things in slow motion and just kind of listening to kind of the feedback and stuff.
Right.
It's always like you can learn from that, I think.
Sure.
And he does the same stuff. You know,
does
he'll
he?
Do the same thing and watch that. Maybe not the whole heat, but like his waves and, you know.
Yeah. I've got our conversation kind of broken into a couple of different categories. Backstory, board design. Can't have a discussion with you without really discussing John John. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's kind of a perfect situation, not to marginalize your own ability and talent, but it's kind of the perfect situation for you to be able to link up with such a prodigy at such a young age.
Yeah,
can you kind of explain to listeners just what that story was, how you connected originally and the relationship developed?
Sure. Yeah. It's pretty simple. It's, basically, I grew up in Santa Barbara, in California, and when I was in my early 20s, I moved to the North Shore just because Santa Barbara is great, like Rincon, everything there, like the waves are incredible, like 1 month out of the year.
Right, exactly.
And I just wanted to surf more than I was surfing and had spent a lot of time in Hawaii already. And so I just decided to move over there 1 year and just see how it all went. And so living there, I just... Basically, the first year I was there, I just surfed a lot and had like little restaurant jobs and stuff. And then I started breaking boards and needed to fix my boards. I didn't have any money, right? I was just surfing, like just barely. I moved there with $1,000 in my pocket, 7 Hamish Graham brand new boards, and that's it, and a duffel bag full of clothes. Rip Curl sponsored me at the time. I had some, you know, that was it. Not with money, just like here's some clothes and some stickers.
Right.
You know? Anyway, so I started breaking boards or digging boards, and I needed to fix them myself because I couldn't pay someone else to do it. And so I ended up going to Country Surfboards, which was right across the street from Sunset Beach. Like, you just go up a driveway, like literally in the parking lot at Sunset, you just walk across the street, up a driveway, and this guy, Ed Surfoss, had a business there where they had a glass shop, and there was shaping rooms and scattered in different parts. It was like an acre property with just, like, shacks on it with, like, a nice mansion next door.
Okay.
This really nice family lived next door. They're always like looking, you know, over their backyard, like, oh crap, you know. But Ed was just such a good guy, and he kind of had been through years of building surfboards there. He was he knew everybody. Everybody knew Ed, but he let me. So I'd go there and buy resin. I'm like, hey, can I fix my board? You know, like I'll pay for the resin or whatever. He's like, okay, give me $10, and you can do this or whatever. And so I was fixing, and then I'd like break a board even and fix. I knew how to fix boards. I'd been working on boards since I was a kid. And then finally he's like, hey, why don't you fix this other guy's board too while you're here? You know, basically he's like, you're going to do this already.
Yeah.
You're sitting around here like, you're doing a pretty decent job. Like, fix this one, I'll pay you. And so I just slowly started doing dings for him, basically. And it was pretty classic. It was just like, I started making money doing that. And slowly... He kind of brought me in, and eventually I ended up basically finning and hot. This was before FCS plugs, even,
sure.
You know. And so I learned how to fin boards. When you fix dings, you kind of do everything. You're glassing and sanding, and you know, it's kind of like the whole, it's almost like the whole process of making a board except shaping. And so I just, anyways, long story short, I was fixing dings at Ed's, started glassing there, and then one day I decided I'd always been interested in shaping, so I finally just bought a blank. Like I've been watching my boards be shaped my whole life. I was always interested in like the idea of it. And so finally I'm like, okay, I'm just going to buy a blank. Ed had a shaping room I could use. This guy, James Turnbull, who's passed away since then, but he let me use his room. And I shaped my first board, and it was okay. It worked. I glassed it, sanded it, airbrushed it. I did the whole thing.
Wow.
And it was all right. Like, I sold it to someone eventually.
Wow.
But so I started shaping. And then after however long, I don't know how long it was, but one day, Alex Florence walked up with her three kids. One was five, one was three, and one was one. Two, probably Ivan, the youngest one, was in diapers. I don't think Nathan probably wasn't, but and asked me to make her kid a board. And I it's so funny that I haven't even, I always forget about it when I'm around her, but like, I don't even know why she came to me.
Yeah.
And then looking back on the whole thing, I my kid the other day, she moved into this office that we have and moved a bunch of our stuff and found like old boxes of stuff. And one of the things she found was this, like a notebook. I wrote down every board I had shaped when I was younger, you know, as I was going through this. And she's like, it said the first board you shaped for John was 4'6" for John. It was my 105th board I ever shaped in my life.
Wow.
So like, that's how beginner I was at that
sure.
point. You know what I mean? And, so it was trippy, you know, it was,
yeah,
it was a long time ago.
And then you and Alex probably hit it off because John was so young. You didn't have a relationship with him necessarily.
Yeah, it was more like I was friends with her, my wife, actually we weren't even married at the time, but, we, you know, I didn't really become like close friends with Alex right away. We just kind of like, I helped make her kid a board. We knew each other. We see each other, you know, everywhere. And, it's a small town. The North Shore is like a little small town, like anywhere, except there's good waves. So yeah, it just slowly developed. I made him a board, and I think I charged her $200, you know, or something to like cover my end of it. I didn't make any money making it, but I glassed it, I shaped it, airbrushed it, glassed it, the whole deal, you know, and I actually still have that board. It's pretty cool.
Oh my gosh.
It's John's, but I have
sure.
it in my shop.
Sure.
But, so from that, she just came back and like, hey, can you make him another one? You know, and it was like, we were surfing together. I'd see him surfing and help him catch waves. And then I just, after a couple boards, I realized like, I think this kid's kind of special. At the time, especially, it was like, little kids that age, it's super common now. Like, guys are riding little tiny boards that are made for them and stuff. But this was in 1997. And, like, kids weren't riding boards made for them, really. They were, like, riding their big brother's board or whatever, you know? And so, to me, it was like this kid was kind of groundbreaking in that sense. And, like, the waves he was riding and what he was doing at that age was pretty crazy. So I just started making him boards for free, and it's been the same deal ever since.
Yeah, and the way that I remember, or that I've heard the stories, is it's Alex was struggling to make ends meet on her own, so it's not as if she could really afford to load her kids with new boards and all that sort of stuff.
Not at all. Not at all. It wasn't like that. She was definitely like, you know, he wasn't some star surfer. There wasn't money for kids. It's not like today where, you know, some 9-year-old gets a paycheck.
Right.
And at the same time, I didn't have any money either, you know what I mean? Like, and so for me, it was definitely like it was a commitment on my part of, hey, I'm going to support this situation and see what happens, you know, and like, I'm going to spend my money on this and it's worth it for me. I felt like, and just not just on like, I wasn't like thinking like big business down the road and it was more like on a personal level. But I knew, like, hey, this kid's special for sure, you know?
And there's no way you could have anticipated big business the way it is now.
And back then, I wouldn't call what I have big business anyways. It's still a small business. But I did have, eventually, when he got a little bit older, I did kind of, I've told this to people, I feel like I did have a vision of, like, you could see that he was going to do what he's doing right now. I thought.
Did you?
Yeah. Maybe not quite so radically as like, maybe I underestimated how good he was going to do a little bit in my head, but I pretty much saw, like, I felt like this kid's going to be the world champ and do this. Like,
wow.
He was pretty special. He still is.
Yeah. There's a lot more I want to discuss about that, but let me go back a little bit.
Sure.
I assumed you were shaping boards in Santa Barbara before you moved, because I haven't really seen your backstory anywhere. I don't know that anybody's fully like covered it.
Hidden. Apparently, I did a lot of jail time. No, no, it's super simple. I mean, that was it, really. It's like I was in Santa Barbara. My roots come from like Matt Moore, who's a shaper at Rincon, yeah, in Santa Barbara, in Carpinteria. And he, when I was a kid, I got my first board from him when I was 13. My dad took me down to his house. My dad doesn't surf. Like, I'm the first person in my family to surf. It's kind of funny. My dad's a sailor. I've been on the ocean a lot, but he took me to Matt's house. His shaping room was in his garage at his mom's house in Carpinteria at the time. He had a surf shop, or he kind of had some stuff going, but shaped me my first board in eighth grade, my first new board, you know, custom board, and then made every board for me for the next 5 or 6 years,
okay,
in Santa Barbara. And I watched him shape every single one of those boards. Like, I was in his shaping room with every one of those. I never got a board like, oh, just make me a board. I was always real interested. And we're still really close friends. Like, he's one of my favorite people. I love the guy. Mm. I just was at his surprise 65th birthday party 2 weeks ago in Santa Barbara.
Awesome.
But he always gave me, he just like, hey, he'd explain stuff. I mean, I was templating my own boards. Like, he would say, like, he'd mark out the line and then go, here, take this template and draw this line and do that. You know, I wasn't shaping at all, but he always explained things to me. And he was always in the shadow of Al Merrick at the time, just because Al had this bigger team. It was just a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a really talented guy. The best, he was the top guy at Rincon. Like, he, surfing wise, like, he was the boss at Rincon. Like, there was no one above him. Like, that was Matt was the guy. And he was just really cool. He would pick us up, take us to contests. Like, we were his Grom team, me and a couple of my friends. And he even tells me today, like, he's like, you know, you were like one of my best team riders, because you would bring me someone to order a board at full price every single week. You know, he's like, you brought me so much business.
Yeah.
Just like bringing a friend over that wanted a board or whatever. And I didn't even like really realize that stuff at the time. But,
well, even as you explain giving boards to John as a young kid, I question the equitability of even having a team,
yeah,
of riders, especially as a smaller volume shaper. Yeah.
Does it make sense? I didn't think of him as a team rider when I started making his boards. It was just like a kid. I was, you know, like he I don't even know how to explain it.
You just want to support the local kid.
Well, I was just stoked. And it was, for me, it was like a cool thing. Like, I was so new to shaping that it was like, oh, cool, this guy, she wants me to make a board for a kid. And like, I had to figure out like a template for that board.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and I'd never shaped a 4.6, first of all. And that was like, and I have that board, like I said, and I look at it, I'm just like, this thing was hideous, but it worked. Hmm. And it made, you know, it was, and you had to hand shape out of like a 5.9 blank. Like, it's really hard. It was tricky. And I did an all right job, but I wouldn't, it's pretty rough compared to something modern surfboards, I wasn't looking at like some investment in my future when I did that. It was just like, whatever it was, you know, mm-hmm. It was just, those kids became my friends and my family. They're like family to me, you know, I mean, the whole family is.
So looking at that though, like having a team, obviously Channel Islands, using that as a reference point, was able to have like a very diverse team of different styles of surfers.
Sure.
I feel like Paizel as a brand is almost John is almost synonymous with Paizel and vice versa, which I could see as being the best thing and the worst thing in a sense, you know. How has that been managing that, and has it obviously, it's helped the brand in a lot of ways, but in what ways has it hindered the brand, do you think?
I don't know that it's hindered anything, except there's not like a lot of negatives to it at all, really. He's like the cornerstone of our company, really. Like that's, he's like my ambassador of my boards, you know? He's the kid that has been around the world with my boards for years and years. And we've traveled around the world in different places and done all kinds of stuff. But as far as who wouldn't want that guy riding your boards, right?
Of course.
So I guess the only negative would be like the competition coming after him. And I've dealt with that essentially our whole entire, especially when I was way, like a tiny, tiny business, or not even really a business, and like kind of just getting pushed around by bigger companies like, oh, we're going to do this or whatever. And it's happened quite a lot. And I think the thing with him is that he's a really loyal person. And I've given him surfboards at work. And that's the bottom line. Like, if he wasn't succeeding, and I've told him, like, hey, if you don't, if this doesn't work for you, don't, I don't want to be the guy, like, you don't owe me anything. I don't want to be the guy holding you back if what I'm making you isn't letting you achieve what you want to do, surfing wise, you know? And so I think I've done an all right job with that. And I'm tried really hard, and I work at it really hard every day. Like, I've been here shaping boards every day, and make getting rush glass jobs, and, you know, doing stuff on a real personal level. Like, hey, get the, here, I need these done. Here's an extra, you know, here's some beers for the glassers and some extra money or whatever it takes. It's a little different than like a lot of the bigger brands where there's like, here's 50 boards. Hope they, you know, like,
yeah.
I work on a different kind of situation. It's a lot closer relationship. And like, I try to make it so that we're more effective with what we're doing. And, not wasting time and resources to get to where you want to be.
Yeah.
I don't have an extra $1 million in the bank to just be like, boom, whatever you need. Let's just make 100 of these and see how they go. And he's not the kind of person that wants that. So we're more like refined in our relationship, which allows it to work better, I think, in a lot of senses. And and for on his end, like, he's getting a lot of one-on-one from me. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm not spread out. Like, I'm going to go, I'm worried about these 20 guys for this contest or even five guys.
Yeah.
Like, that takes a lot. It takes a lot to take care of a real pro surfer that's changing things and, you know, not just like spitting out the same thing over and over again and adapting to what they want and how they're surfing and how much they weigh and just all these changing things, you know? So I think we work really well together, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously working. I see tremendous value in that personal relationship, of course.
Yeah.
I also, though, see value with the opposite, which is...
More diversified.
Yeah, letting a surfer ride a bunch of different equipment.
Absolutely.
Like, does he ride anybody else's boards ever?
Oh, he does, yeah. He tries different boards. But, I mean, not that often, because he's different than most guys, you know? I don't know how to explain it. He's gone through times where he's ridden other boards, for sure. He's not like getting boards on a regular basis and trying boards by a long shot. It's here and there, and it's kind of hasn't happened in a long time, actually.
Yeah.
But if you see, I think basically what it comes down to is like, what are you getting out of your boards? Are you feeling like you're missing something? And even this year, at the beginning of the season, we kind of like regrouped and had that conversation like, hey, where can you get better? And one of the things was with boards. What can we do to improve your low end performance? Like your wave wise, like shitty waves. What can we do to make you surf better on a waist high left, which is maybe one out of a million waves he's going to ride. You know what I mean?
It's not Sakurama this year though.
Yeah. So that's what we looked at, and we worked on those situations specifically. And Ross Williams brought up that, you know, he's like, hey, he came into the picture and said like, hey, let's just look, because John really likes to, he's like a lifelong learner kind of person. He just is always wants to know more and figure out a better way or a different thing. He's not like, he's very, he's just progressively, he wants to keep moving forward, you know? And so that is a challenge to me too. But as a shaper, like, that's what you want too. Like, I don't want to just be like, oh yeah, he just said that one's great, I'll keep writing. Like that, he did that for a long time where he'd just be like one board in all conditions. And now he's changed that around a lot more, which was, for me, was a welcome thing.
Yeah.
'Cause it just like, it's a little stressful. Like, you're all, okay, am I going to like rise to the occasion and these are going to work or what, you know, but so far it's gone well. And it's
so
fun.
With that specific example, let's figure out how to improve what you're doing on crappy waist-high lefts. What was the answer to that question?
Well, not ride the board that works great and, you know, double overhead right. That's the number one
answer.
Which
is what he was doing previously.
Change the rocker, you know. I'd always like, hey, try this board or do this, you know. And he was more like, he just kind of wanted to, like, make what he had work in a lot of conditions. And he was just real comfortable on that. And they were, like, under volume. It was like, add some volume, change some rockers, change some, you know, you know what the difference is between a good wave board and a shitty wave board, basically.
Sure.
And just figure out what you're comfortable on and what we can do and what that formula is, you know?
Yeah, it's funny talking about him making that transition from riding one board. I actually had that in my notes, which was, he seems like the guy who rides something at pipe, the same, like a 6.1 or something at huge pipe.
Yeah.
And then he's riding it at the beach break doing huge airs on it.
Yeah.
And I actually didn't know that he'd adjusted away from that. And I was just wondering, I started questioning my own choices in my quiver, where I'm like, maybe I'm just complicating things.
Sometimes people do overdo it.
Yeah.
Like, do you really need three entire different boards for every time? You know, like, it's like...
For the same beach, but just slightly different conditions.
The waist high board and the shoulder high board and the head high board.
Yeah.
I don't think that's really quite the case.
Or, and also, there's so many variables happening at all times when you're riding a wave that I'm starting to wonder if, instead of designing for those variables, maybe simplicity is better. Maybe just like breaking it all down to the simplest form.
My, I would say that my design theories, even though I don't really have like a formulated theory or philosophy, but it definitely, when you look at the boards I make, simplicity is one of the things. They're not like overly done. You know what I mean? They're pretty, they're not like crazy rocker or crazy concaves or weird outline. Like, they're clean. I try to keep things pretty simple is good, I think, in a lot of senses. And then when you, then you can do these little, but I'm not like overly conservative either. I'm not like, I don't know how to explain what I'm saying exactly,
but I've seen
that. I
don't
like to go too nuts.
Yeah. I've seen that in your boards. They look pretty,
if a board looks good, sometimes it seems like to me it works good.
Okay.
Like, not always, but like, it's, you start off with a board. If a board looks terrible,
yeah,
that's a bad start.
Sure.
You know, like, you're all, oh, what's that weird bump and this and that, or like, this feels funky, or I don't know. If you pick up, you know, when you pick up a board and you're like,
yeah,
oh, this thing's going to go good. Like, usually it does.
Mm-hmm.
Not always, but like, you can get a, if you can surf, you can kind of have a feel of a board like, oh, this thing feels like it's going to be pretty sick.
Where do you see the biggest potential for design improvements in surfboard design in general?
I don't know if there's, I don't know how to answer that exactly, but I just think every shaper has their own limitations or expertise in certain areas, you know, and like, on a personal level, I just feel like I can always grow in the smaller wave design. Like,
oh, okay.
That's stuff where, to me, that's where I'm like focusing the most, almost, in a sense. It sounds weird, like living in Hawaii or whatever, but to me, like, making bigger wave boards is pretty easy.
Is it?
It just makes sense to me. And it's like, you have all the ingredients are already there. You just have to, like, kind of like, as far as like speed and power and all that stuff, you just have to be able to like harness it and control it and make it function well, which is a lot easier than making something go fast in shitty waves.
Hmm.
And turn still. It's easy to make a board that goes fast in shitty waves.
Yeah.
But to make a board that goes fast and responds and feels, you know, lively and good is a challenge, I think, and really bad. I'm talking like really terrible waves.
Sure. I see. I was thinking in large waves, you can do everything that you just said, but guys are just catching the wave and going straight. I think there's room somewhere on the horizon for guys like Albie Layer at Jaws to be taking off under the ledge and trying to turn the board. Kai Lenny doing that air.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like there's room for design improvement in big wave boards that'll allow you to catch waves and still maneuver once you're on the wave.
The boards I'm making for the guys like surfing Jaws and the Bay and stuff like that have proven to be pretty good.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we're trying to do. Like,
turns and stuff.
Not necessarily. Like, most guys want to get barreled, really. That's kind of where it's at with big waves. They don't really want to do like a big cutback. Like, no, and they're not going to do a snap. You're just never going to go on like a 12 or a 30 foot face and do like a big, oh, I went up vert and through tail. Like, you're not going to do that.
Yeah.
On a 10-6. So what they want is a board that's going to knife, take off, get you in easy or late and make it, and then knife up under the lip. Basically, is their big thing. That's the number one performance thing I would say in big waves.
So what are the design implements to help improve that?
There's just, you know, it comes down to, like, it's all based on rocker, basically. And then thickness flow is really important in a board. Where you put your thickness, what you leave out is just as important as what you put in. Where you get rid of thickness, where things are really, like, you'd be surprised at, like, how thin tails of, like, a giant thick 10-6 is, you know?
Hmm.
Whereas, like, I've looked at boards from the past that are just, like, the tail block's an inch thick or something.
Wow.
Because the board's super thick, and mine are, like, a quarter inch thick or less. You know, they're, like, down to nothing, like, trippy.
Because that allows for that, like, almost like an extra fin to grab the wave face?
It's just, like, it's just knifey, yeah. It's just, like, you can respond. I you can you want to be able to sink your rail. Well, same time paddling into a big wave. Like I've never caught a wave that's super gnarly, big, giant, paddling into it at all. But like that feeling, even of a 12-foot wave in Hawaii, like when you're paddling into a big bomb at sunset or something, it just like everything feels so small. Your giant board feels, everything just gets shrunken down, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like to be able to have the confidence to paddle into those waves and then have the board do what you want is pretty great, you know? That's the goal. That's really it. And like I watched, I made a board for Billy Kemper that he won the Jaws contest 2 years in a row riding that same board, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was
yours. He doesn't ride for me. He's sponsored by Town & Country. They make him great boards, everything. He just came to me for a couple big boards. And that board, I watched it. I didn't realize it at first, and I watched it again recently. He got a 10 in the last wave he got at Jaws in the last contest. He won the contest getting barreled. And if you watch the wave, he drops in a little bit late. Not airdrops really, but like it's a late drop, and then mid face he knifes it up and pulls in the barrel and gets spit out, and that's what we're trying to do.
Got it.
Exactly. You know, just what you like. That's it.
Yeah.
He didn't have to go to the bottom. He didn't wait. If that board wouldn't have responded the way it did, he would have just kept going straight, missed the whole thing, and got a freaking 3.
What what size was that board?
10.5.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I know that wave. I'm envisioning it, and you're right. It looks. If you made a guess, I would say that's like an 8-something,
yeah, exactly.
You know?
So that's the thing. And those are quads. And the quads that are like, they're pushed real far forward. The fins are pretty far forward. They're super loose. They actually surf. Like if you ride like a 9-0 like that at sunset or something, it's like a board you can carve around and surf on it, you know? So that's exactly what we're trying to do. Like that's all there is in big wave surfing, I think, really. It's not like I said, no one's ever going to be like hitting the lip.
Right,
it just doesn't work. The physics aren't right.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. The speed and everything, and just the power and push of a wave. But getting barreled is where they're at.
Have you explored asymmetry at all?
Yeah, I made Mark Healy we did a project for Surfers Journal a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, where he just said, "Hey, make me an asym." And he did it with 3 different shapers, like not just me. He had 3 different guys make different, you know, their ideas of what it was. And mine was pretty simple. I'm not like, that's not really my forte, obviously. But I just made one side of the board was so we made it for Wrights, first of all. He's a regular goofy foot. So the bottom turn part of it, so when his heel side was a standard like round pin. And then his toe side, so when he's coming off the top, that's what he said he wanted to do, actually. So I guess I eat my words, but he kind of did want to, he's like, I want to be able to do like a carve or a snap, kind of, you know? So the toe side had a wing and a swallowtail, and it was shorter, so it was pushed up. It was kind of weird with a big wing in it. And then I placed the fins relative to those. It was a quad, but the fins were in different places. They're all pointing in the same direction, but placed in different little, relative to that tail shape. And then, so it was just to go right, and then he got barreled on lefts at Waimea on it.
Oh,
the
really?
First time I ever saw him riding, he was like pointing these closeouts at him. Not closeouts, actually making them.
Yeah.
But he did get some waves at Waimea on that board, and I don't know if he rode it anywhere else.
How big was that board?
It was a 9.8.
Okay.
So, and that's a big board, but not like a giant board.
Yeah. I remember, I mean, I've seen him get barreled on the lefts at Waimea,
but
I don't know if that was the same board or not.
That was like this session. Camo board. It was like a what are those planes? Like from World War II, you know, like with the jaw, the tiger, flying tigers or whatever, like camo with a shark's mouth kind of thing.
Got it.
It's pretty sick.
Let's go back. You were talking about Ross Williams's insight with John. What has he provided as a coach for John in this year?
I don't know specifically, like, I don't get in between them at all, you know, like, they do their own thing, and they have their own insight. I'm around them at contests or at home sometimes, and, you know, they're watching waves. Ross will watch a lot of the footage. They film pretty much every session he has, almost, you know, and so Ross is really looking at boards and body placement and stuff like that. I don't know, like, the kind of, like, coaching advice, you know, like, heat advice. You know, I don't know what he does there. I don't know what he has to say to him about that. But he's helped with, because Ross is a pretty big guy. They're similar sizes, actually, Ross and John. John's actually a little heavier than Ross, but he's a lot younger, too. So Ross is always like, hey, I ride like this thick of a board and this much volume and this, you know, like you're the same, you know, you only weigh 5 pounds, or you're almost the same, or maybe 5 pounds more than me. Why aren't you riding, you know, why are you riding these boards like 2 liters less than I'm riding,
sure,
or whatever? So that was one of the things he came in with. And I had always been trying to get, like, I know what John, I know what the formula is, at least, for what John should be riding size-wise, and it wasn't what he's riding. He's riding little boards, and you can see him struggle in small, slow waves, partially not just because of the design of the board, but because of the amount of foam under his feet, strictly. Like, you take that same board and plump it up, and it's going to flow a lot better. But he's always like that knifier feeling, you know, how he surfs, where he just, like, sinks the rail and just, like, pushes it super hard, and it holds, and that's partially because there's not too much foam there, too, I think. But Ross kind of like, hey, he gently kind of pushed John in that direction, which helped. It was like having an ally, kind of like, oh yeah, like I had kind of almost given up at that point. Like, dude, I've told him that, I know, you know, like I've been telling him that for years, and Ross was like, okay, but he kind of kept at it, and we're slowly getting there too, which is nice. So for me, that's been a big help. Like, I appreciate that part of Ross's effort.
Mm-hmm.
And, I feel like John's surfing as good as he's, or better than he's ever surfed right now, basically. And I definitely appreciate Ross kind of like teaming up. He helped get the volume up.
Interesting.
I hate to just talk about volume. That's something people are so hung up on, volume, but just a little more foam. I like,
yeah,
you know, and like, hey, why don't you just, like, one idea Ross is like, hey, just at the beginning of the year, like last year before he went to Snapper, like, just like, let's just make him 6 brand new boards he's never tried. Like, I can design a new shortboard every day, you know, like, I mean, not to say it'll be the best board you want, but like, I can think of or change little things and go like, this should do this or this or this. So we did that. And then like instantly it was like, okay, no, I don't like this one.
Okay.
But like, these two are promising. Let's develop off that, you know, and that was a cool thing too. And that helped. Ross was like on the beach watching that. Here, try this board. Okay, that one looked like, what did you think about that? You know?
Yeah.
But I think for John, a lot of it is just having like a second set of eyes.
Okay.
He has pretty good like gut instinct. He knows what's going on. John's the best surfer in the world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Imagine being that guy. Like, you know how your boards feel. It's nice to have another guy go, yeah, that did look good. Or, you know, I don't know.
I know. And that's what always interests me is like, he is the best surfer in the world. And for, like, he won the world title last year with Bede, obviously helping coach part of the year.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at Bede going, but John's a far better surfer than Bede. Why would he rely on Bede?
He taught him how to surf. He taught him how to win heats.
Right. And then you look at Ross, and Ross comes along and goes, hey, man, why are you riding that? I'm riding this over here. You should be riding what I'm riding. Well, the question there is, how could Ross tell John what to ride if John is an infinitely better surfer?
It wasn't that like black and white by any means. It was just more of like this. It was literally like, hey, you need more volume in your boards. That was the main thing. And then it's like, hey, that board, like... And then, like I said before, it was like, the let's look at your weaknesses. How can we improve the boards in those weaknesses? What can we do to make you surf better in that? And is it can we work on your technique in those waves? Can we work on your equipment in those waves? Can we work, whatever it is, let's add it up and get better. And I think, frankly, he's surfing better than ever in smaller waves.
Well, he is. And what's crazy is it's in ways that were unexpected. So, like the Margaret River example, he just surfed it in a way that we hadn't ever seen it been surfed before. And in the free surf sessions on the lay days, I remember him doing like a backflip on a right on Instagram.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, well, I guess tomorrow when the comp's on, we're going to see John like do the gnarliest airs we've ever seen. No, he just does the gnarliest carve we've ever. And I'm like, oh my God, that's what is so exciting and what's winning heats is the judges saw that Instagram clip too. They sat down to judge and then it threw them as opposed to when we watch Felipe surf, we're expecting him to do a crazy rotation. And so he has to outdo his last crazy rotation, you know? So I think that's been interesting to watch with John where Ross can show up at the beginning of the year and give him those 6 new boards. And it's just shifting gears in an entirely different way that we weren't expecting. I think that's what's been exciting as the viewer.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny now, it's totally, one of those boards that we started with is still a board that he's like, that's one of his go-to boards right now here in this event. He hasn't ridden it yet, but he's like, if it gets smaller, this is what we'll be riding. And he ended up naming it, it's the Voyager 1, it's called. And, but at the same time, the board that he's been riding the most from Margaret River, even to yesterday's heat, the Ghost, is like, that's the thing that's the least expected for me of the whole thing. Is like, he rode that, the board he won Margaret's on, he was riding at Trestles yesterday.
Hmm.
A 2 inches shorter and made out of EPS.
Oh, okay.
But the same design.
Got it.
And so now, so the funny part is, he's almost going back to the one board theory.
Right.
But the good part is, I think that this one board is a way more versatile board. Like, it does actually work in what he wants it to do. Rather than the one board theory that he had along the way was kind of, it was, there was always a weak point of it. And now, right now, it's looking like there's not that much of a weak point for this design.
Has he been riding it in hollow waves?
Oh, yeah. Everywhere.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
That's where I made that board in the first place. It was like, just go get barreled on this thing.
Really?
And then instead, it was like, oh, you just did a giant hair on that and
right.
like that, just all kinds of stuff. So it's been really cool, and that's been exciting for me. And I think it's cool because that board is unique. To if you looked at every single guy in this contest board, there's not a single board that looks anything like it.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Really? Can you explain?
That's really cool.
What
for
it's
me,
unique?
That's exciting, you know?
Yeah, of course.
It's just got a wide, it's got a wide point forward, that, and the volume, everything's pushed forward on it. Like the thickness, typically in a shortboard, the thickness in the tail is greater than the thickness at the nose at 12 inches. Generally speaking, and some guys it's really thicker in the tail than the nose. This board is the opposite. It's actually a little bit thicker in the nose than the tail. And the wide point's forward in the whole board. And it has a wide point, like it has a, it's almost like a 70s outline or something, a very, you know, a modern, it's not a 70s outline.
Sure.
Let's not say that. No. but, and then it has a really pulled in tail. Like the tail itself is a pintail almost. Like, and my round tails on a shortboard are typically really round. And this is, it's still, I mean, it's round. It's not like pinny at the end by any means, but it's like, it's a pulled in tail. Like the tail's like an inch narrower. At least it's a probably closer to 3/4 of an inch narrower than like a typical shortboard of that measurement that he would have ridden even.
Okay.
And so it's a whole different thing. And just everything about it is different than, like it, they just, it's not the same as a shortboard.
Fascinating.
And that's really exciting for me because it wasn't something that I saw coming. I saw this as more of like the Margaret River sessions or like barrels at Backdoor or whatever.
Yeah.
And then to see like, he's like, you know, this thing feels pretty good in smaller waves. And I've been hearing that from more and more people that I've been making the board for. And that is exciting for me to have like a little shift.
Yeah.
Like it's cool to actually do something different and have it work. It doesn't always happen, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess...
It's pretty rare in that little 34 dudes, that 34 guy area,
yeah.
It's unheard of to have... I mean, there's guys writing different... Like, let's take you know, the sci-fi or something like that. But that's a whole different thing. And that's basically a little small wave grovel board with a few extra additions to it, you know, and it works great and that kind of stuff. But it's not like, it has its place. It's really, you know, this board, to see it like, wow, this worked from that down to this, all one board.
Yeah.
Is pretty cool.
I guess because the design implements aren't so obvious to the eye.
Not at all. Yeah.
The market doesn't shift as much. Like, I haven't heard people talking about it, whereas I do remember them with the sci-fi and also Dane Reynolds back in the day riding the dumpster diver and things like that, where the wide point was forward, but the tail was so weird looking that everybody noticed, you know?
Yeah.
So we got to get the market.
It's explainable, but it's definitely...
No, you explained it well. You know, I've seen him riding it, and I didn't notice it to the eye.
That's the good thing, right? It's like, you don't... that's kind of the scary thing in pro surfing. Like, people are scared. I think that the top 34 guys are afraid to ride something that's too far off because they don't want to be underscored because of whatever... If the board looks like it's too easy to surf or... Yeah. You know, it's funny. There's, like, these kind of unspoken parameters that you have to follow, it seems like, in that upper-level surfing. That surfboard wise, like, you can't go ride a fish in a heat and then you're just not going to win the heat.
Exactly.
Because somebody's going to ride a shortboard and push through and make, you know, whatever it is, even if what you're being able to do on that fish is actually better, you know, it's funny. It's like there's no written, you know, rules about it, but it definitely is like something that's kind of there.
But it would be nice if the market knew what that board was so that they could go buy some surfboards.
Sure,
you know what I mean?
Well, it's getting out there, I think. People are pretty... for sure. More and more. I've been getting... It's our number one selling board.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Today, which is nice.
It actually... That segues perfectly to another comment that I had, which is one thing I really like about your guys' program, your guys meaning you, John, and even Ross, I would include in this, is... It's so contrary to the modern formula of self-promotion, Instagram, 5 times a day, like toot your own horn, all that stuff. Like, even John doesn't really use Instagram.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you have a personal Instagram account?
We just have Paizel Surf. Yeah. I do. I have one. It's private. I don't even...
exactly.
If I haven't called you in the last 2 weeks, I'm not going to have you be my friend. But I keep it for like my true, like close friend.
That's my point exactly. You know what I mean? Everybody else in your guys' position is leveraging those things and the public eye to sell more surfboards, gain more influence, all that sort of stuff. And you guys are just like so quiet, humble. And then even the board design, like I said, reflects that, where it's just like, oh no, it's super subtle. Nobody would notice, and we're not really even actively promoting it.
Yeah,
we just want him to go win heats.
I just hired a new manager who disagrees with that theory, but
and that's his job. Meaning a marketing manager.
Like, have someone else to do some. Well, just
is
like
he the
general
guy,
manager?
Is he the guy who emailed me?
Probably. Yeah. Oh no, that was Jason. Yeah, that's he's moved on to a different project, but Andy that was just here actually.
Oh, okay.
Andy is coming in, but yeah, no, it's for me my. The funny thing with my business is it's really personal. Like, people think that my business is a lot bigger than it is because I've had so much exposure through John, really. Yeah. And I actually make boards for a lot of other people, believe it or not. But he's brought in so much visibility to my name and our brand or whatever that it appears a lot bigger. And we do have, like, I have licensees in 7 or 8 countries. I travel around the world and shape and make boards for pro surfers around the world. I do a lot, but it's also still really a family business. Like, my wife's over at our office right now doing stuff, and it's real personal. It's not like we're not some big company. We are. Yeah. We're a surfboard company, but we're a small business, and it's a total family business at this point, which is, I love it personally.
Yeah.
So there's I think there might be a perception of our company being a lot bigger than it really is.
Yeah.
And it's growing, and we want it to grow. Like, that's our goal, is to grow it, for sure. There's no doubt. I'm not trying to pretend. I'm not trying to, make a living. And I do already, which is nice. But we're not, like, loaded. We're not blowing up. We're not, you know, I'm not traveling in first class. Except every once in a while I get upgraded.
So that, I wanted to actually.
I make surfboards.
Yeah, which, by the way, I don't know if the listeners know, nobody really gets rich doing. Very few people have got rich doing making surfboards. Yeah. So as your business has grown over the years, what have been the biggest challenges and learning curve for you? I would imagine you ideally, when you're getting into it, it's like, oh, I'll just spend my life in the shaping bay and sell boards to people.
It's funny, is like the cool thing about what's happening, we have grown it enough that like, so I went from like, it was just, my wife's always helped me, first of all, like I got to give Dally 100% credit for like from day one. And even if it was just like working so that I could keep shaping, even though I wasn't making money shaping in the beginning, or whatever she's done, like she's supported it so much. It's just unbelievable. Right. And she's part of it. She's really smart and she's really good at figuring things out, but she's also not from the surf industry. Like she doesn't know how other people do it. Okay. She just knows what we do. You know what I mean? And she's learning more and more about what other people do too. But anyways, my point is, in the beginning, it was just me shaping surfboards basically. And, you know, sending someone in, writing out an invoice. There weren't even invoices, for God's sake. But anyways, as it's grown, I had to do more and more stuff besides just shape.
Right.
Because it got big enough where I'm like, oh, I have to return these calls or I have to take these orders. And like, I was talking to every single person that ordered a board. Like, I used to know every, like if someone walked by with a board, like I knew the guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now I'm at the beach in Hawaii and like people walk by and they don't even say hi to me. And they're walking by with a board I made. You know, I trip out on that where I'm like, oh, I don't even know who that guy is.
Amazing.
Like, he doesn't even know who I am. And he's going, and I'm like, or I'll just go like, hey, how's, you like that board?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, I love it. I'm all right. Cool.
Fascinating.
It's trippy. That was a transition to like, oh, I don't know those people. But my point is, there was a point where like this was really overwhelming, where like I had way too much to do and like trying to shape and do everything. And then it got where we just were making enough money to have help. You know what I mean? And that's been a big thing where like I'd make less money, but I'm more freed up to do what I like to do and my part of it. And ideally, like right now, my job is to shape surfboards pretty much, and which is really cool. I don't have to do all the, I'd be packing surfboards in my living room to send to Japan when we were first doing stuff. You know what I mean? Or I was glassing, I was glassing boards for years. I built surfboards for a long time, where I was shaping them and glassing them, and like someone else would sand them. I had my own glass shop, but I was doing all the laminating. Or I, even before that, I was laminating for someone else and doing my boards through their shop too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stuff like that. And each step was like, oh, I got a little bit more towards what I wanted to do. Like now I don't work for anybody else glassing, but I'm still glassing my own boards. And then eventually it was like, now I'm only glassing like the team boards. Like I used to glass all John's boards until I don't know how many years ago, but for a long time. And then it's like, I'm only glassing my boards, only just mine to get them, you know? And now I don't glass any boards. And I don't mind it.
Sure.
I don't mind glassing. But like, those have been like kind of stages of stuff where you get more help and there's people doing things. And so I am able to focus more and more and more back to what I love doing in the first place. And that's shaping.
Good.
Which is cool. And also like going surfing, like, oh, I'm going to split and go surf. You know, like it's awesome. That's my goal, is never to just like work all day every day.
No.
When you start shaping boards, or I think most people in the surf industry, it's like you start off in that industry because of surfing.
Right.
And then a lot of people get so wrapped up that they don't surf. For me, I just want to go surf, make surfboards, and keep changing stuff up, you know?
Good. Yeah, and I would imagine too, the more time you're able to spend in the shaping bay the way that it is now, you could actually refine what you're best at.
Totally.
You know, not wasting time sending invoices.
Yeah, totally. It's
which cool. You're not good at anyway.
Yeah, you probably don't think you're putting your energy onto the stuff you're good at. Like, I'm not good at paperwork.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm good at surfboards.
Exactly. There's a lot of people who are great at paperwork.
Yeah, totally.
Hire them.
And don't mind it. And they're like, all right, cool. I took care of that. I balanced this spreadsheet
exactly.
Or whatever. Like, I hate spreadsheets.
How much surf media do you consume? Obviously, you're involved in the WSL watching, but do you subscribe to magazines anymore? Do you watch surf films, surf edits online?
I'm super gnarly.
Into it or against it?
No, into it.
Oh, really?
I'll tell you. I love, like, I kind of trip out, actually. I was just talking about surfing. Like, surfing magazine's gone. Surfer magazine is, like, I don't even know how many times a year they come out anymore, but it's, like, a weird thing that's, like, random. I don't know. They don't, like, I'll put it this way. I live on the North Shore, Foodland is our one grocery store, which is probably the most surfy grocery store on earth, and like they don't sell Surfer magazine anymore. Wow. Like it used to be, like you'd be waiting in line and there's Surfing and Surfer and you're like, oh cool, I'll grab this.
Yeah.
And I used to buy every issue, no matter what. And then it got kind of down to like, I can just look through it here. Yep. And see if there's something I'm interested in. If I am, I'll buy it. If I'm getting on a plane, I'll buy it at the airport, whatever. But now it doesn't really exist. That's a trip. So I'm more like, I get a lot of stuff from online, and, I'm pretty like, if you ask me about something in Surfing in the last 20 years, I could probably answer a lot of the stuff.
You know, really?
Like I'm pretty into it. I'm not into like the deep history of surfing. I'm not against it, but I'm not like, oh, in 1947, somebody did, or even in the 60s really so much, but like from the 90s to now, or even the 80s to now, there's not a lot that's gone by me, I would hope.
So what are your
I mean, not hope, it doesn't matter.
Sure, but you're
like,
just into
I just
it.
Like it, yeah.
So but, what are your go-to sites on a daily?
Like on my phone, I look at like every day, I have Beach Grit and Stab. I love those guys, and they're funny because they're kind of like go against each other a little bit. But
yeah,
I like the people at both of those sites. And then like if you go to Australia, those are my two things. Surfline, I go to, like if I'm on my computer, I have like on my favorites, I got Surfline, Beach Grit, Stab, WSL, they're actually stepping up to like some pretty interesting stuff. I mean, it's, you know, it's pretty limited, but it's still interesting. And then I'll look at like surfermag.com, like online, they have some good stuff like that. They actually just did a board thing on the Ghost, that board.
Oh, so they did.
That's up right now. Yeah,
cool.
It's pretty, and it's great. Like, and they're you know, nice people. I know a lot of people through the industry now, mostly because of living in Hawaii, everyone comes there. So you kind of meet people throughout your life
there.
But, those are the ones I really like. And then you go to Australia and there's magazines. They have magazines still. Like, they're strong, you know, like there's, it's funny. People in Australia probably know more about me than people in America through the media. They tend to be real interested in stuff and do little articles, and they're really into surfboard stuff. They're more, it's a surfing nation.
That's
we're
what
not
I was
a surfing
say.
Nation. Like
yeah.
we're just surfing's like a silly thing here almost.
Right, right.
Whereas Australia it's like a real thing.
Right.
And so they're like, hey, what can we, let's talk about this or do you know, it's cool. I like it.
Interesting. What surfers are you most excited to watch?
Everyone's you know, it just depends. I love, that's one thing I was just going to say about like the edits too. You're talking about like watching clips or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like I don't really get into that stuff too much. Like if there's somebody I really like I'm all, oh, Dane Reynolds. Like I actually haven't watched his new thing that's
you're
out.
You're blowing it,
yeah,
dude.
I know.
You're like a week behind schedule. That's an eternity in the internet.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's still online. If it's available anymore. But
yeah.
I'll watch stuff of guys that I do have an interest in, and then, but like just everything I'm not into.
There's too
but
much.
I like to read stuff. I'm more into like the reading. I like articles.
Okay.
I'm more into like, hey, what is this information? Like what's going on in the industry or what's happening with these, you know, I don't know. And it's a weird thing. My wife says I have a problem.
It's not the worst addiction to have.
Yeah. If there was like a surfer trivia game, I'd do pretty good, I think.
So which surfers are you most excited to watch? You mentioned Dane Reynolds.
Dane's, I love watching Dane. Obviously, I like watching John and his brothers too. Like Ivan and Nathan are actually amazing surfers and mm-hmm. really, they're super fun to watch. I got a great crew of kids. They're doing a thing called Shadow Company.
Yeah.
Which is Nathan Florence, Billy Kemper, Luke Davis. And
I've seen Koa Rothman,
Koa, yes.
But I've seen Koa Smith on
Koa
one
Smith
or two trips.
Koa Smith jumps in there too. Those guys, the Koas, the two Koas, those guys are good friends.
Okay.
I make boards for Nathan and both Koas.
Okay.
Not like they're not on my team, but they get, you know, like, oh, Nathan is, but I'm, but like Koa Smith, he gets boards from me. He gets boards from other people too. Not just me, but he gets a lot of, you know, he's gotten a lot of boards from me. Koa Rothman, I make most of his boards. And so watching what those guys put out, I love, because I'm like, A, I'm connected to it, and B, they're just badass. You know, like they're those guys, like in Hawaii and even anywhere where there's big waves, it's like I'm really stoked that like I'm a part of that crew.
Yeah.
Because they're the pinnacle of stuff right now to me when I look at it.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm biased saying that. Like whoever's boards any of those guys were on, I would think that. And but I'm stoked that they're like mostly on my boards doing that stuff, those kids.
That one wave that Cole Rothman got at Pipe last year.
Yeah.
Was that on your board?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then Billy's waves, like you're...
Well, Billy, just to be clear, like Billy does ride for Town and Country. I don't want to take anything away from that relationship or anything. Like Glenn makes amazing boards.
Those are Pangs?
Super cool, yeah, Pangs. Yeah. And they're great. And Billy just came to me only for a couple bigger boards.
Sure. So that, I thought that the Shadow Company edit that Surfline just put out was like the end of the series.
Yeah.
Is it? Or are they continuing?
I don't know. Those guys are, you know, they're pretty vague kids. They're just doing their thing.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we just did, like, I didn't even know. One of those places, I didn't even know where they went.
Right.
And they're like, hey, I need my boards. And I forgot. I'm like, where are you guys going? You know, and I'm not going to say where. I know where it is now. But
the one where Cole Rothman took the board,
yeah,
to the head?
They called it Atlantis or whatever.
So gnarly.
Yeah, gnarly. But I'm like, whoa, I didn't see. They're so, those kids are so humble. Like, they don't come back going like, oh, I just got the most, we just blew up. You know, they don't even mention it.
Yeah.
And then I'll be like Nathan, that wave that Nathan got at Chopes a couple, yeah, years ago, like down, hands down, like the gnarliest wave anybody paddled into, and it, as far as I can tell, Corey Lopez got a really gnarly wave a long time ago there.
I remember it was cover of Surfing,
right up there. Like it was really, and at that time it was. Anyways, that wave, Nathan's like, well, oh yeah, like I didn't even, they didn't even tell me about that wave. Like I didn't even see it for 3 months or 2 months until they like put it out in John's movie.
Wow,
and I was just like, holy shit, are you kidding me? He's like, oh yeah. I heard you got like a good one down there. He's all, oh yeah.
Really?
Yeah, like they're so gnarly. And Koa Rothman, that same session, they were going back and forth. Like they were like, I'm going on the gnarliest one. And Nathan's like, I'm, you know, they were not.
Yeah.
Like literally they were pushing each other. The waves those guys got in that little session was just crazy.
Well, you're right. That does sound like humility. But I was wondering if it's also just being jaded. Like on that Shadow Company trip, yeah, they come back and they're like, oh, it was all right.
Yeah,
because they get to go somewhere every,
yeah,
month.
Yeah.
That's insane.
There's that.
There, you know?
That. But they're pretty amped. Those kids are like full surfers, you know. They're not the guys that like surf every once in a while and have to go on a trip and get,
right,
photos. Like they freaking, they go out of their way to get good waves, you know. Like they don't mess around.
That Shadow Company edit, I really, really did enjoy.
Yeah.
They did a phenomenal job.
I still haven't even watched the whole, they have a full movie. Like,
yeah,
full,
it's like 20 minutes or something.
Movie, but yeah.
But I like miss. Sal Masekela's doing, yeah, all the narration. They, yeah, develop storyline, yeah, in it.
I was super stoked.
It's really
they
cool.
Did that. I mean, I'm not taking any credit, but last year I'm like, you guys are killing it. Like, you need to like have your own website or something and do something, you know. And then someone put that whole thing together.
Well, Surfline, it looks,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
is the one that did it.
Yeah,
which bravo,
yeah,
to Surfline, because,
yeah,
honestly,
no, I'm like, these guys, this is a story right here. Like, these guys are amazing.
But they've also gotten a lot of mileage out of it by doing a feature for each trip.
Totally.
So like every other month, you see a new,
yeah,
thing,
and it's killer. Like I think everyone who's every not stoked to watch
good.
That, it's like it's
well.
Good.
And then when the edit comes out in the end, I stopped what I was doing,
yeah,
and it directed all of my attention.
Yeah.
So I thought Surfline did a phenomenal job, yeah, totally, of like capturing
it's
that.
Cool. And those are. I mean, to me, those are like, that's going to be. They're a historic group of kids, you know. They're like a real. That's going to be like 20 years from now. It's like, oh, those guys at that time were doing this. That was the gnarly. You know what I mean? You look back. That's going
to
be.
I agree with you, and it's easy to write them off because. Like with Luke Davis, for example, it's just like, oh, he's just living the party lifestyle, and like the pink hair and all that, yeah, stuff distracts
until
you.
Until he paddles into the freaking bomb that you wouldn't want to touch.
Yeah, you watch,
yeah,
that and you're just,
yeah,
like, holy,
yeah,
crap, these kids, totally, are ripping.
Yeah, yeah, and they're not holding back. They're not, are they?
So,
and they're all nice kids. That's the cool part I like, is like I'm all killer. It's not like I'm all, they're kind of jerks, but I'm stoked they're on my boards. It's like, I love them, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, so much of our world exists on Instagram nowadays. Which accounts are you most interested to follow? Do you follow other shapers, surfers?
Yeah, no,
what do you
all
into?
Kinds of stuff. I follow, like, I'm pretty good friends with a lot of shapers, you know? I think it's pretty cool, actually. That's one of my favorite things about maybe, like, just being a... Like, I love being a part of surfing.
Do
like,
you?
Like, that's one of the... Like I just love surfing so much, like as a thing, not just like, not as like going, I love going surfing, but also just like the whole thing. It's like it's a thing, you know, surfing's like a real, it's an entity of its own, you know, and I'm stoked that like to be a part of that. But the people that I've always like really looked up to in that are shapers. Like I've always admired shapers and been interested in what they're doing. And I've been really stoked to like have in the last like 5 or 10 years even, met so many of these guys that like Like, I'm friends with Mark Richards. You know what I mean? Like, the guy's like, hey, what's up, Mark? Like, Simon Anderson, how's it going? You know, like, it's just like, it's incredible for me. Yeah. Because there's a lot of guys that are little, they're not that old, but they're older than me. So old enough that, like, I mean, MR was winning world titles when I was in junior high. But yeah, like, he's a legend. You know what I mean? And so just to, I've just found that the most shapers are pretty cool. Like, I like them.
Yeah.
I get along with all of them pretty much. Like, I was just down at Timmy Patterson's the other day hanging out with him, went next door to Matt's, to Biolus's, and checked. He showed me through his factory and stuff. And it's just been really cool. Like, to have, I feel like there's this, like, kind of a little group, not like a brotherhood or anything.
Camaraderie.
So cheesy, but like, yeah, just like, and that people aren't like real jealous of each other. Like, people are stoked, and a lot of shapers come to me and they're really stoked that, like, John has stayed with me, because that's a rare, rare thing. There's endless guys, the most people that ever say anything about that are shapers. They're like, dude, I'm so stoked he's still riding your boards. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, that doesn't happen, you know?
No, it really doesn't.
And so, I don't know. I just like, I'm stoked that I got to become friends with a lot of good guys, like a lot of shapers around the world, and that they're cool. Mm-hmm. And they're not like petty and not like, oh man, you know, your shapes suck. You just got lucky, or you just did this, or, you know, and no one's like that to anybody really that I know.
Yeah.
Everyone's pretty cool.
That's and great.
I love it. Like, go to the contest and like hang out with, like, I was hanging out with Darren Hamley yesterday, and like, I love that guy. I drove him around for 2 weeks in Bali one time. He didn't even get a car. He just like made me drive him around. I'm like, all right, I'll take you.
Yeah. You know? That's really
cool. But like,
cool.
It's cool. And then those guys are like, you can learn from those guys and just, I don't know. I dig that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I'm more of a shaper fan than a surfer fan, I guess I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I love surfers too. But yeah, anyways.
Do you have thoughts on the WSL? Kind of, there's this reported new changes that are coming in 2018.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on that? And just kind of, what's the insider's temperature on how the WSL is doing their job?
I'll say two things. One is, I don't know as much as people think I might know.
Okay.
I'm not like, I don't really get into the business end of that stuff at all. I'm just like, I'm the shaper. You know what I mean? And even with John, I'm not like, hey, what do you think about this? Like, we don't, with him, we're not, we have a different relationship. Like, we're talking about like fun stuff and what we're doing and, you know, what, like boats, shit like that. Not like, what do you feel like about the, I don't know.
The current judging criteria.
Yeah, it's not like that at all. That's like shop talk. You know what I mean? We don't do shop talk. But on the other hand, what I've heard or what I read, and I read it on Stab or something, I think, and I didn't even know, like, John went to that meeting the day before. I didn't know anything. He didn't tell me anything. I didn't have any idea. We didn't even discuss it. But if what they say is the case, the only thing that my thoughts, if say whatever they wrote was totally true, exactly, which I doubt it is, even if maybe that's what they're thinking right now, they'll probably shift things around on the way to getting to where they're at. And then I also heard it's not until 2019. It's another year away. It's not like next year it's going to start this way.
Got it.
But there's, I think it's going to be tough on the lower level guys. That sucks for them. Cause there's a lot of guys that are not coasting. No one's coasting, but like, just like getting by.
Right.
And, everyone's trying hard, but they're not, you know, whatever. So I think that's going to be a little bit tough. They're going to kind of call that down. And then the thing that I heard was that, so they're going to go, you get cumulative points over the year, but those points don't make you a world champ. It comes down to one event at the end of the year that makes you the world champ. And that is not smart, in my opinion.
No.
Like, I don't know why you do that. And then they're saying, like, okay, we're going to take the top six. They're going to surf. Number six will surf against number five. Whoever wins that surfs against number four, wins that, goes, you know, on the, and number one. So basically, to be a world champ, you have to win one heat.
Right.
That seems,
it's crazy.
Really, really weird.
Yeah, that element of it, I think they'll adjust.
But to be in that position, you have to do well throughout those other contests too. So that's maybe it is. Maybe there's some merit to that. You know what I mean? Like, hey, you kicked ass all the way to here, so we're going to give you a free card, and these other guys have to fight to beat you. But that, to me, it just doesn't seem like it's a very legit thing. Like, who's going to walk away from that going like, I'm the world champ, that was great,
right?
You know,
and you could be in that position and then just simply not get waves, like
exactly,
we see happen all the time. So
maybe if they boiled that down to like three heats,
yeah,
or I don't know what, but yeah, like a bad heat. You have one bad heat and you don't win the world title. That's freaking lame.
I do like the idea of smaller contest windows.
Totally.
Fewer surfers, all Absolutely. That stuff. And even like an idea of a majors system.
My favorite part, sorry to interrupt.
No.
My favorite just is the season thing. I've been saying that for years. Like, they should have a season. Like, you need, like, for me as a surfboard maker, a shaper, to have 3 months where, like, we don't have to make sure that someone's winning a heat next right. week on that board, and we can just go, like, hog wild.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to change everything for me. Like, yeah. hey, I just made you 10 completely different boards. Go take these and go surfing. You have 2 weeks.
All different places. Yeah.
yeah, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And then we'll find out 5 of those and get rid of 5 of these. You know, like, to me, that's a beautiful thing because, to be honest, I believe that pro surfing, if at that elite level, holds back surfboard design more than almost anything.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and that to me is a bummer. But, and especially when that's really my biggest showcase of my work,
yeah.
is that top level pro surfing. And so I don't get to show all this other fun stuff. I don't, and that's my own fault business wise that I need to branch out and like, I need, you know, this guy that rips on a twin fin or what, you know, like that's my problem from marketing perspective or whatever. But from design work, it's like, I have to make sure that these boards work and they have to be good next week. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And if they're not, we have to fix that right away.
Yeah.
And they can't go too far. So if we have 3 months off where like every guy gets to go do whatever they want, and dude, everyone says like, oh, pro surfing, those guys are so lucky. And they absolutely are. 100%. Not lucky, but like that's a killer life.
Of course.
But it's imagine like your life where you spend 2 weeks of every single month away from home.
Yep.
And it doesn't work for everyone. And it's not the easiest thing. It's not the best thing. Some people just want to be home for a little while. And everybody will argue like, hey, are you kidding me? I got paid to surf. I wouldn't care what I did. But I don't think it's always entirely true. You know,
anybody who says that, go live on the road for a year and then get back to me.
It's not that great. Yeah. Like even I go to contests and I'm like, and it takes different kinds of people, but like imagine going somewhere for 2 weeks and just waiting for 4 days of those 2 weeks to happen.
Yeah.
So they're like, and different people handle it different ways. John and his crew handle it amazing. They make the most, they're like never complaining. They're never like, oh, this sucks. Another lay day. They're just like, what are we going to do this week? Killer. Let's go. They're on it.
Yeah.
And it's rad. And that's, I think that's one of the things that keeps him where he's at too, is his ability to take those 10 days out of that 2 weeks that they're not going to surf
mm-hmm.
and make the most of that. And also to surround yourself with the people that are on that same page with you that
right.
make those 10 days good too.
Right.
You know, he has Brandon Wasserman that travels with him that helps him. Eric Knutson, who's his filmer, who's a rad guy. And Ross, and they all get along really well. And then there's a little mix of different people here and there and in and out of that, you know, and they all get along so well. And I think that's one of the key elements where you see guys, there's a lot of people that like hate traveling
yep.
and hate being on tour and can't wait to get on that. They like on the plane 2 hours after they lose their heat.
Yeah.
And then there's other people that are just, my ticket's not for another 4 days. The waves are good. I'm going to stick around and have fun.
Well, I've always attributed Kelly's success to that. And somebody, it wasn't me that identified it. Somebody at some point mentioned it, but it's like everywhere he goes in the world is home for him.
Well,
he has little
like
homes. Yeah, exactly.
Kind of,
So rather than staying in a hotel, he's staying with families, gets in the routine of the same food all the time.
He's never had home, essentially. I mean,
he's had
houses.
A million of them.
Yeah, he has houses and stuff, his home is just wherever he is.
So to have home field advantage everywhere you go is significant.
That's part of like what John does when he brings people. Like people trip out sometimes, they're like, oh, it's like you have like an entourage or something. And it's like, it's not an entourage. It's like, it's people that like being with him. He likes having them with him and they can help him to get to doing what he wants by helping him eliminate some of the things that he has to deal with or just streamlining things or whatever. And at the same time, just being friends. Like you're not like, oh, what, you know, you're not yearning for your friends and your stuff when you have them with you.
Right.
It's killer, you know? And he's done a great job with that. And with his brothers, like his mom, she took him and his brothers everywhere from when they were little kids.
Yeah.
Like they camped on the beach at Barra when John was like 10 years old, when no one even knew about that place. You know what I mean?
So
and she came home, she's like, we stayed at this killer like Point Break down like these rocks and on the beach there. Like it was amazing. And then like, what, 5 years later, they're like, the best ever surf event, you know?
Yeah, the Rip Curl event.
Yeah. And it's like, oh yeah, that's where they were camping. Because the locals in Porto are like, hey, we'll take you. They'd always take them to special places. That kid, wherever he goes, he gets to go to the secret spot with someone. Wow. You know, and like his family too. They just love him.
That's amazing.
It's pretty cool. And that's been a whole different adventure life. He had an adventure life growing up, you know, like not just like being a pro surfer, but just like enjoying where he was at with his mom, and like at all different levels of comfort and in the dirt or in a nice hotel or whatever it is at different times. So it's pretty cool.
Listeners have told me, they're like, wouldn't you love to get John, like to interview John? And in my mind, I was always like, yeah, whatever. I'd rather interview Alex.
Yeah.
Like she's the fascinating figure to me in that whole scenario, you know,
the whole family. They're all really special. They're all really cool people.
Do you ride other shapers surfboards?
I do. I don't like go after it. Like I'm not like, I'll ride anything. Like I don't care. Like I'll grab a board. Like, I've ridden probably more Timmy Patterson's than anybody, because I'll go to Portugal and he shapes there too for the same factory. And like sometimes I'll go there and I just won't have a board yet. Like I'll shape myself a board and get it glassed, or I won't have, like it gets big and I'm like, oh, I'll just ride this 6.5 or whatever. And so I'll ride that. I'll try different. I'm totally open-minded to do it. But I'm not like chasing it either. I'm not like, oh, I got to try this and see why it works or whatever.
But how informative is it for your learning experience as a shaper?
It's, I don't know if it's like, I'm never really like, it's not like I'd ride a board and then like take it in my shaping room and measure it up and try to copy it or something. You know, that's just not my deal. But maybe like ride a board and like, oh, it feels like this, and like kind of look at it and like, wow, there's a lot more concave through that center line than I usually do. Or there's, you know, a different thing in the outline or whatever it is, or thickness flow or something. I don't know. There's nothing real specific where I've done that, I don't think, but I like the, it's good to feel other stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And it's interesting. Sometimes I'm like, whoa, this thing feels really different than I expected, or good or bad or whatever, you know? Yeah. I don't know.
Are you mainly just riding short, pointy-nosed shortboards, or what are you riding?
Well, so since I live in Hawaii, right? And I live right at Rocky Point. And so I surf Rocky Point a lot. It's a really fun wave. There's waves there all the time. It changes around. There's rights and lefts, and it changes around a lot. And you can ride, unless it's like really big there, you can ride a shortboard no matter what.
Okay.
Like, so, and my shortboard is a 5'8". Like, I ride a 5'8".
How tall are you?
I'm 5'9".
Oh, okay.
So, it's like, well, my wife says I'm not quite 5'9", but I don't believe it. But,
keep talking. It's going to take five as well.
I am, like, my standard board's 5'8", and it works in waves from, like, waist high to double overhead.
Okay.
And but it's not a normal shortboard. It's a wider nose. It's called a Paisalian. It's my favorite. Yeah. Like my favorite design. A little swallowtail, a little chunkier forward. It has a real flat deck, so the rail feels full for its thickness. And but it just is a really good all round board. It works everywhere, and it's my favorite design I've ever made.
Okay.
And so I'll ride that a lot. But I also mix it up. I mean, I'll ride a little bit bigger board, a little bit smaller board, but basically everything. I'll make myself just straight normal shortboards, just mostly to try the designs. I used to ride all shortboards all the time, just pointy nose, normal shortboards. I really like round tails because they're a little less, I don't know, I've been into squash tails a little bit more too now. But pretty much like my boards go from like 5'8 up to 6'1-ish in there, and different things like the Ghost, that new board, I've been riding that a lot. Like I was in G-Land and Indo for a month this summer, and I rode a Ghost quite a bit when it was bigger. And then my boards go like way bigger. Like I'll go up to like a 7.6 or something from there. Or no, I guess I have a 6.8 or something for like big Jockos. And then I'll go up to like something a lot bigger. So, the majority of my surfing is done on like high performance, not necessarily pointy nose, but they're all pointy nose. They're not round.
Yeah.
But like in that realm, a modern shortboardish thing, but not like that. Like, CT boards. They're like more like fun daily driver kind of boards.
Yeah. So if you could have one board shaped by anybody on the planet, what would you get from who?
I was just talking to, I was over at Biolus's the other day, and he has a bunch of different boards from guys. And one of the guys I'd really like to get a board from is Simon, because he's just rad. And like, he makes, like, I wouldn't want to, like, Matt has like an old, like, a copy of like the thrusters that he was making in the 80s or something, you know. I'd rather just get something like one of his modern boards that he, you know, something that he's just making for guys right now.
Yeah.
Just because I like, I don't know, I just think it'd be fun. I've always kind of wanted to sign. I'm going to try to order one.
I was going to say, that's attainable. You can get
that.
Yeah,
totally. No, I was going to talk to him about it, actually.
I think I think Tim Stamps is making them here.
Yeah, I'd rather, I'll go to the stores, but I wouldn't mind either way. Stamps makes beautiful boards too. Like, yeah. I'm good. I like Stamps. He's another guy, like, we're in Australia together a few years ago, like going surfing together and stuff. He'd pick me up and take me surfing. And
yeah.
Super cool guy. Really talented. I've had Timmy, I haven't had Timmy Patterson's, but I've ridden enough of them. I feel like I kind of have.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know who else. There's not really any, like, I don't know.
Simon Anderson fits. That's
Simon's
a good answer.
Kind of my guy. I like those, like, I like how his boards look. I haven't even really picked up that many of them, but I just like they have a good look to them. And yeah. Like, I don't know. I really like Timmy's boards a lot too.
I remember Kelly surfing J-Bay on those Simon Andersons like 10 years ago. Yeah, he switched it up a little bit and rode those, and that was some of the best surfing I had seen done at that time. I was loved that.
Yeah.
What's your current relationship like with surfing? Like how often and all that?
Every time it's good.
Yeah. What does that amount to? Like 5 days a week or?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like I usually, if the surf's good at home, I'll surf in the morning before I go to work and then I'll surf again in the afternoon when I come home or I just won't go to work. Like I just, if the waves are good, I'm just going surfing for sure. I travel to go surf. Like I go to Bali and work. I shape down there.
Oh, okay.
In the summer. So I'll spend, like I was there for, well, it's just under a month this summer. Like sometimes I'll spend up to 2 months in Bali. And working down there, I surf as much as I can. And that's one thing, like, for a while, I've never gotten away from surfing at all, but I've definitely, like, had times where I'm, like, haven't been surfing as much, and I'm like, that's lame. Like, I'm getting older, so my surfing ability is definitely, I've noticed, like, I've peaked, which sucks, because it's like, I always felt like I was getting better, like, okay, and I still can, I can get barreled and surf and turn, you know, I mean, I can surf all right. I'm not a bad surfer, but it's definitely like if I don't surf for a little while, I'm like, well, I feel a little slow to my feet or something lame where I'm like, I can't believe I didn't make that drop. Like I do shit where I'm like, I just went over the falls on that thing. Like that would have been a piece of cake like 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
But then it makes you reassess your priorities and spend
like,
more time.
So
on the
this
water.
Is my time. Like I got to do this and like, or trips. Like I'll do like from Hawaii, you can go to Fiji in 6 hours. You're in Fiji and like, take a boat out to cloud break and surf, you know, like we do stuff like that. We're like, okay, 4 days of just boom, 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 surf our brains out or whatever. And so I'm totally committed to that. Like
good for you,
love
man.
Surfing. That's like, that's my deal.
Man, you're living the dream.
I'm a surfer before I'm anything else, I would say.
Well, it's funny. So when you were talking about board design, in big waves and stuff, I was thinking like, I would imagine a lot of your learning curve as a shaper, or a lot of your feedback comes from yourself. You can take those designs out in the water and ride them, but with big wave surfing,
that's a different
that you're just reliant on. Yeah.
No, it's
everybody's
different.
Feedback.
I used to go out, like I have a 10-0 under my house that Bushman gave me. I worked for Bushman. He helped me out a lot when I was younger too. And when I moved to Hawaii, he was one of the main guys after Ed at Country. Bushman gave me my first shaping job. So I was a back shaper for him. When he's getting boards cut on the shaping machine. This is when the shaping machines were just kind of kicking in, and which seems like ancient history now, I guess. But he was funny because he had his own shaping machine, but he wouldn't let me use it. He forced me. He made me hand shape. Right? He's like, no, not yet, buddy. Like, keep going. Which I'm totally grateful for to this day. Like, I can go in anywhere in the world with any tools or. And shape a surfboard, which is really cool. Back to that. Bushman gave me tons of help. Absolutely, like as far as shaping, like information and actual physical, like here's rockers or here's this or you're like here, fix this board. This rail was off. You should have done that. You know, he was the one that gave me it all right there for sure. So I give him and Matt Moore. Matt Moore was like, Matt Moore never taught me like. I didn't ever shape when I was with Matt in California, but his whole lifestyle was what made me want to be a shaper.
Okay.
Like what he did his whole life. My life is surfing. Like that's all my business is surfing. My kid surfs. One of two kids surf. My wife doesn't, she can surf, but she does sometimes, but like everything I do revolves around surfing.
Yeah.
like from, so there's not even a line between work and cert. It's all the same to me, right?
Right.
Like, so there's no difference. And that I think is super important. But so Matt was the one that was like that. He was like in the ocean. He surfed. He was a great shaper. He's a good surfer. He was like everything. And I'm like, wow, that's a pretty cool thing. His family, it just how it all worked. And so that's what really, I think, pushed me down there. But then Bushman was the one that like taught me what to do. You know what I mean? Like he was like, hey, here's what you're doing wrong, or here's how you can do this, and you can use my shaping room, and here's these tools, and let me show you this, and I'll give you a job and teach you even more, you know? So he was the one that like, he gave me my skills, you know?
And you have that, you said you have a 10-0 from him?
Oh yeah, that was my tangent. What I'm saying is I did used to go surf bigger waves. I wouldn't say like I was a big wave guy by any means, but I've paddled into some decent sized waves.
Yeah.
And then like toe surfed for a bunch of years.
Oh, really?
Like I actually broke my neck toe surfing. Like I got, like I've been like, I've towed in on the days when they're running the eddy, you know, like big waves.
Wow.
And not like scared shitless and had a great time too, all kinds of stuff, you know? And I don't really do that anymore. It's kind of faded out and it's, I don't have that drive. Like it's more and more scary the older I get for some reason, I'll be honest. But I've ridden big waves, but I haven't ridden really big waves by any means. So I do have a feel for like some of it, but now with the boards, I haven't ridden, like I've surfed big sunset on my boards and I've surfed, you know, decent sized waves, but I wouldn't say I've surfed big waves on those same boards, but I know what they feel like. And then I get really good feedback from everyone that rides them and
sure.
I can tune them in from there. And surfing, like I'm not putting my, like my ability to, like when I was younger, I obviously surfed better than I do now. And I didn't have people telling me as much about boards. You know what I mean? Like I was my own team rider for a long time in the beginning. I was like the guy like, okay, this, I can do this. Maybe this will be better or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I've now completely know, like I don't take my own feedback into account with boards. I do ride all the boards and feel, I know what they feel like. I can ride a board and know right away, like, oh, this feels good. Or this feels, I don't like this or whatever, but it's not because I'm ripping. It's just because I know what a board feels like, you know, or feel different fins in a board or whatever.
I would ask you who your pick is for the world title this year, but obviously John's your pick. So I'll amend the question and ask you, who's John's biggest contender for the world title this year?
Yeah, well, for sure, Jordy is, I would say. But at the same time, I mean, at this event, Jordy has a good history of doing well. I mean, it's his hometown now, too. And John narrowly lost to him to a couple of times. 2014, I guess. I think John could easily win this event. He surfs so good. The waves are going to pick up too, which is everyone likes. I think not only, it's funny with him, it's not just like his surfing just suits a bigger canvas. You know what I mean? It's not that he doesn't rip in smaller surf even. It's just like his surfing, the best of it comes out with more area. You know
it's
what
a
I mean?
Great way to describe it.
Yeah.
I've always felt the same way, but did not know how to word it.
Yeah, I didn't. I've never said that. But it makes sense. Like, Felipe Toledo rips, and his surfing suits little curvy, small waves. Sure. Amazingly, John's just, it's more of a dramatic thing to me, and more like, ugh, I don't know. Anyways, so that said, I think he has a really good chance to win this event still. Always. I think he has a good chance to win every event, really. But, and then going forward, you have Portugal, Spain, France and Portugal, and then Pipeline. And clearly, John has a huge advantage over Jordy at Pipeline, in my opinion.
Totally.
Like,
unquestionably.
Like 9 day. But, at least, but also, I would have said the same at Chopes last month in heat. You know what I mean? So heats can go really weird. Like that. Like surfing-wise, John is a superior surfer in those kind of waves. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
But yet, he lost. You know? So, you never know. But ideally, I mean, John's won France, John's won Portugal. He's never won the Pipe Masters, but he's won at Pipeline plenty of times. And anybody
in
their right mind says he's the number one pick to win Pipeline every time it's on.
Exactly.
So those are good odds.
Jordy, though, looks like a threat, you feel?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's such a good surfer, and he's on his, you know, he's on a high right now, which is dangerous. But I feel like John is just so, he's so focused and so, like, the kid's like a little monk. I mean, he's just, like, zenned out, you know? He's, like, he's just, he's just next level. So I don't know. We'll see.
It's exciting times, man.
Yeah.
I'm excited to keep watching.
It's crazy.
Final question for everybody interviewed is just, what was the last surfboard that you rode?
I rode a longboard last week, or 2 days,
did.
2 days ago at Cardiff with my daughters.
What?
Both daughters longboarding for like 3 hours.
Epic.
Yeah, super fun.
What kind of, tell me about the board.
Oh, it's just.
Who shaped it? What size?
Actually, we're right here in the Arctic Foam Factory. It came from these guys. So they, my friend Andrew just has like, he'll design stuff on a CAD, and they build some boards in Mexico at their factory.
Yeah.
And so he just had them built down there.
What's the label on it?
It just says Arctic Foam.
Oh, it does?
Yeah, it's just his own.
Never even seen
it.
He
has a really good Mexican shaper that does stuff for him. And yeah, so they just have a bunch of boards at the house. We spent the whole day down at Cardiff.
Sweet.
And my one daughter, my 19-year-old, surfs a lot, like shortboard, longboard, whatever. And then my 14-year-old won't go surfing because her sister surfs, so she doesn't want to be like her. She likes horses. But somehow she got in the water and stayed in the water for 4 hours straight the other day. I got her a new wetsuit, and all of a sudden she's like, she just surfed, so it was pretty cool. I got to surf with both my kids. And, yeah, just whatever. I just want to go surfing.
Yeah. You know,
that's, I don't care if it's a shortboard or a longboard or whatever.
Yeah, I longboarded there a week or two ago.
Yeah, it's super fun. It's killer.
Right on, dude. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for so much time. Appreciate it.
Great.
Thank you, John Pizel, for taking time out of your busy work schedule and social obligations while you're in Southern California. I'm hugely grateful to get your voice on this ongoing conversation that we have on Shaping Surfing and, of course, on just this Surf Splendor podcast network at large. So thank you for that. SurfSplendorPodcast.com is where you can find everything that John and I discussed in this episode, the boards, the videos, all that sort of stuff. And then, of course, chime in on social media at Surf Splendor. Great way to keep this conversation going. Again, it's not just between John and I. We want to hear your thoughts as well. And lastly, just if you use iTunes or whatever podcast app you use, feel free to rate and review the show. That helps with our ranking in the podcast app, so it helps other people to find it. And then another way to support the show is we have a donation link set up on the website, and this show exists exclusively on donations. So if you could throw a couple of shekels into the bucket, we would very much appreciate that. All right? That is all the pandering I have for you today. I'll be back next week with a new episode over on Spit, which exists on its own podcast feed now. So if you want to hear Scott Bass and I discuss surf news, open up your podcast app, search for the word Spit, and maybe add the word surf, and you'll find it there. You can subscribe. We're doing that every other week, so check that out. All right, until then, this is David Scales reminding you to get back in the water, share a couple of waves, and shred on.